This interview is being conducted with Captain G.F. Squillis by Gunnery Sergeant Alan B. Richardson at Marine Corps Schools, Quantico, Virginia. The subject of this interview is Med Operation Plan 38 Delta, and it is unclassified. Captain, would you state your name, grade, and service number, please?
G.F. Squillis, Captain, 073-955.
What were your duty assignments while you were in Vietnam?
I was the S-3, the operations officer of the battalion. And that's the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines.
What period did you serve in these billets, and where were you physically located within Vietnam during the period covered, sir?
I served at Da Nang, in the vicinity of Da Nang, from the 8th of March, 65, until the battalion was relieved on 1 September, 65. The entire period alternated from security around the airfield out to the 327 complex and then forward to the west of the airfield.
Captain, could you give us a little background on Med Operation Plan 38 Delta, sir?
Well, the 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines, had been the number one air mount-out unit. This meant that we had to be prepared to be deployed by air. We assumed this responsibility in about the 20th of January. This is all in the period 1965. During this time, of course, we made all the plans, all the contingency plans that would be necessary, including the assignment of chalks, personnel to the chalks, the gathering of all of the attachments, which were considerable, including an artillery battery, an engineer platoon, a reconnaissance platoon, and various sundry other attachments necessary. We went off this status about the middle of February, and we then reverted to what we called standby for number two surface. We were to be prepared to go on board shipping of Task Force 76. During this period of preparation, it was evident that a decision was going to be made regarding landing of U.S. forces in Vietnam. At this time, there were various contingency plans that were out, and the one that concerned us the most was the 38 Delta. At that time, it was 38 Charlie. The 9th MEB was activated for planning, and a new 38 Delta was made and circulated to the units, and our battalion being one to receive it. Early in, or rather late in January, we sent a contingent task-organized rifle company down to Da Nang at the then-known Shoe Fly, which was security for only the helicopters that were there at the time, and some limited amount of security on the airfield. This company, reinforced company, included mortars and engineers, etc., gave us quite an advantage because it became evident to us that if any unit were to be landed, we would be the most logical one to go, since we had almost 25% of the unit already in Vietnam.
You were physically located in Okinawa at this time.
That's right. The battalion minus.
Yes, sir.
The Company D was the company that was in Vietnam. The remaining three companies were in Okinawa. As I said, we came off the number one air status, which meant we could have people on liberty, and restrictions were lifted. During this period, we were just completing our on-island training. We had completed the cycle in Japan, and we had just pushed the last company through the counter-guerrilla school up at the northern training area in Okinawa. The only company that did not go through that was, of course, Delta Company, which was in Vietnam. About the end of February, the S-3 and myself and the battalion commander were called to the division headquarters, wherein we were made known the contents of a letter of instruction. This letter indicated that a landing of Marines in Da Nang was imminent. At this time, of course, we brushed off all of our plans to be sure that they were could be executed and be in an expeditious manner. Discussions with the G3 of the 9th MEB, Lieutenant Colonel Mura, who had been the battalion XO, gave a little bit of a hedge because we had some idea of what would be expected. I'd had an opportunity to talk with them on the plans. Also, I had gone down to Task Force 79 to speak of what requirements we would have. So as far as preparation goes, we were extremely well prepared. But we were taken off the alert, and another unit assumed the responsibility for number one air. However, in private conversations with the G3, it was quite clear that if there were an air mount out, we would go. At this time, there was talk of dates. 3-9 was going to cross, land across the beaches off from Task Force 76, and we would land in 83 Chocks at the Da Nang airfield. Our preparation then, of course, was had to be absolutely certain that we had everything as we wanted it, as we felt that combat would be imminent. One problem that arose during this time was the number of chalks was reduced. I don't remember the numbers now, but I know the original plan called for about 86 or 83. I don't recall the number now. And this was reduced a significant number, which caused us problems. We had to realign some of our chalks. There were some things in the chalk assignments that we didn't like. These already have been made as comments. We felt that we didn't have enough latitude in loading of the aircraft. For example, the exact plane that the battalion commander would be in was already designated. How our companies would be broken down had already been determined. The logistics aspect were taken care of for us, which I might say was an outstanding portion of it. It had always looked good in paper, and I was quite surprised to see that it worked extremely well. The marrying up is the portion I'm speaking of. This is where the troops are alerted, brought down to the air marshaling point, and from there the logistics tail is attached to it. This is the ammunition, which you do not have, and all the ordnance and equipment, the water, the rations, everything else that's necessary. That portion there was outstanding. It was on the 7th of March that the duty officer notified me. I was the was a Sunday, and the many of the battalion's officers were at a religious retreat. The only two officers that were available were the XO and myself. It was about 1 o'clock, and we were told that we would leave ASAP. I went down and reported by telephone to the G3, and the problems, of course, of being able to talk about the operation were a problem. But finally, it became clear that we were going to execute the Plan 38 Delta. This, by this time, must have been 1330. We alerted all of our units, all of our attachments. We had to recall our people from Liberty. We had no method set up for this. We had had a method set up when we were the number one air, but since we'd been taken off that, we did not have one then. Our solution was to send senior NCOs and mites through the local Liberty areas and round everybody up, call all the officer clubs, call the areas, and again, it was remarkable. We got 100% back by about 1530 or 1600. General Collins personally spoke with the XO and told him he would expect us to be at Futima by, I believe it was 1900. And he asked, could this be done? And we said it would be tight. in subsequent telephone calls, the time was changed to 2100. There was a certain amount of slides as far as the time to arrive. At almost exactly 20:30, we left the airfield. This is the first six chalks. We had some confusion in going out simply because the 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines, was returning from a field problem, hit the area almost the same time as we were going out. But through a lot of competent officers and NCOs just keeping their heads, we got everything going on the right way and were there at in time. Then the marrying up commenced, which I've already mentioned was a tremendous operation. I was greatly impressed with our logistics capabilities. We then actually commenced loading aircraft at about 4 o'clock in the morning. At that time, we were told that there would probably be a slide. This was from the Air Force. At this time now, we were in no more contact with any Marines. We had a liaison team set up, but we were now physically in the aircraft. The pilot informed us that he was told to wait until 0700, which is what he did. We landed the first six airplanes in Da Nang at about 12 o'clock local time. There was some confusion on the airfield simply because the lead aircraft, the aircraft that the battalion commander and myself were riding in, lost radio communications. And we had some difficulty, and the pilot landed on the Air Force side, which is Da Nang East. And this caused some confusion. But once we were on the deck, the big important thing was is that we had one company already there. They had already allocated tentage. We knew exactly where we were going to go, knew where the people were at. We had done this during the weeks of preparation, and an order had been issued. All the company commanders knew their exact area of responsibility. This had been verified in the briefings that we'd held with the 9th MIB. Without belaboring the point, if I could, I'll run over some of the things that appeared that could have been improved.
Sir, before you do that, what was the flight time from there to Vietnam?
I believe it was 6 hours. There's a time zone change. I think Vietnam is India, and I don't remember what Okinawa is right now.
Were there any problems involved in flight?
No. The weather was bad. It was bad weather, and they were afraid they may not be able to land. It was cloudy and overcast, and there was some fear of rain. However, this didn't materialize.
All right, sir, would you go ahead and discuss the problems involved?
After we landed the first six chalks, I would say about five more chalks landed without incident. By the time that we had enough of the battalion staff on the ground and the better part of two companies, we were then told that no more landings would take place, that there'd been some type of hold-up and some confusion, which I learned later on was a apparently some misunderstanding or conflict, I don't know which it was, between Commiss McVee and the 9th MIB. This left us in a bad position simply because water, rations, and these type of items were programmed throughout the 80-some chalks that we had, and therefore we were now almost without water. Ammunition was no problem since the troops carried the basic allowance, and there was, of course, no immediate engagement as we landed. But water and rations were short. We handled this for about the first day with 3-9. 3-9 had brought across the beach something like 15 days of everything. And we were able to take some of their items, and then the MEB got resupplied, I assume, from Commiss McVee. This was a little bit of a problem in country because the logistic chain was not established in Vietnam, and the idea, of course, being that we would come self-sufficient. The chalks didn't resume moving again until about 2 days after that. There were a 2-day gap. This caused us quite a bit of problems. We immediately had to assume our responsibility for the Da Nang perimeter, and this created tremendous problems since we had to spread quite thin. We were very familiar with the area. We had excellent coverage as far as photos and maps go. We had 1 to 25s, 1 to 50. We were in fine shape there, which we had got from our unit. This is Delta Company that was in Vietnam at the time. However, intelligence as of what the situation was non-existent. We immediately made liaison with elements of the advisory staff that were there from the Da Nang Special Sector, and they gave us a high-level briefing, which sort of was a thumbnail sketch of what was going on, but it had very little application to our daily problems as to what we were going to confront or be confronted with. As it turned out, this was a significant thing that I found during the entire deployment, was a lack of intelligence. When we started to operate and meet the enemy, whatever information we had, we deduced. It was very, very rarely that we were given information. We had to get our own information. This, of course, now I'm emphasizing, is at the early stages of the deployment when there was considerable lack of unity of effort. I'm sure that this has been resolved to a great extent now. But at that time, intelligence suffered, and to some extent, logistics. But as far as the air mount-out was concerned, it went perfectly, except for the evidently political ramifications that cut the chalks in about a third and slowed down the deployment. I've been led to understand that this was some type of conflict between Commiss McVie and the 9th MEB. I don't really know this as a fact, though.
Do you know that they were aware of the problems involved at the time, MEB?
Oh, of course. Well, we were in perfect communications with them. We had laid wire, by we, I mean our element, Delta Company, had laid wire. We had reconnoitered for a CP. We had done many of the things that you can't do unless you're in country, had been done for us. We were bringing back almost on a weekly basis some key man from the company. And at that time, I would talk with him, go over the photographs. He'd point out areas. I'd have questions that I wanted answered by the company commander. He'd take these back. It was a perfect arrangement because we were not permitted to go in country. I'm sure you understand there were a lot of numbers, games that were played at the time, and I'm not qualified, nor do I know what the significance of them were. But this is what gave us a tremendous hedge. We were very much informed. All of our company commanders had been issued a complete order that had been written a day before, which permitted us to give very complete instruction. And the only thing that went wrong, and I can't really say that it went wrong, was the cutting off of the chalks. As far as the Marine Corps plans, as I know them, for the mounting out of units, it seemed to me extremely workable. The one thing that I noticed, and it may be only because of the level that I work with, I believe that we should be given a little more latitude on loading the aircraft. In other words, where we're going to place the people, similar to the way you do with a boat team.
Thank you very much, Captain, for your interview.
Okay.